Hello, my name is Joe Schwartz, and I would like to take a moment to tell you about my podcast. It's called Still Unknown, and it's a podcast dealing exclusively with unsolved murders, disappearances, unexplained deaths, and other unsolved mysteries. If you are a fan of the classic TV show Unsolved Mysteries, then you'll definitely want to check out my podcast, as many episodes deal with cases featured on the show that still need answers. So look for Still Unknown on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening to this podcast here. And let's solve some mysteries together.
Welcome to Forensic Miles. My name is Miles.
Hey guys, it's Sean.
Forensic Miles is the unofficial companion podcast to the cult favorite show Forensic Files. You've seen the show, you know the crime, but is there more to the story? Not so much this time. This time Forensic Files seem to really cover most of it, but I do have a couple little tidbits that I think are pretty interesting.
I'm ready. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Okay, so today we're covering the Forensic Files episode Watchful Eye, which is the murder of Carrie Nelson. Blue Mound State Park is located near the town of Laverne, Minnesota. It's a large park that offers beautiful and safe access to hiking, camping, and rock climbing. I think they even have like swimming holes and, you know, everything that you would want from a park. The park is named after this beautiful pink cliff that is located on, you know, the park grounds. And it's interesting because, like I said, it's pink. But it originally looked bluish to early settlers, and that's how they decided to name it Blue Mound Park, which I thought was very interesting. They've got bison tours and prairie wildflower fields. Overall, it's a beautiful park filled with some amazing sights.
I'd probably visit.
Yeah, I would definitely visit, although I'm not a huge hiker. I'd definitely go for the bison, though. However, on the afternoon of May 20th, 2001, some employees and a visitor would see something that they would never forget, and not in a good way. Rebecca White, an employee of the Interpretive Center at the park, as well as the daughter of the park manager, Richard White, left her on-site residence and headed to the park office. She noticed that the clock read about 2:30 p.m. It was her second day on the job, and she was looking forward to getting to know her new coworker, Carrie Nelson, who had worked at the park for about 2 years at this point. When she entered the office, she immediately realized that something was wrong. Laying on the floor was Carrie Nelson. She had blood on her face, and it was clear that she was dead. Just as Rebecca noticed Carrie's body, she heard the office front door open and, out of fear for her own safety, quickly ran back to her residence to notify her father. So she kind of went in through a back door, not the main office door.
The employee entrance.
Yeah. She later said that she feared the person entering the building was the person who had killed Carrie, which is probably a smart decision to just immediately run out of there and get yourself out of that situation. 3 911 calls came in about Carrie's murder. When Rebecca ran to her residence to tell her father that Carrie was hurt, he immediately ran out. He didn't even put his shoes on. And he basically turned around and as he was running out of the door and told his wife to call 911. The second call came from Richard himself. Once he had seen the scene and realized that Carrie was not just hurt, she was dead. And this call came from the office phone. The third call was from a park visitor. She had been the one who came into the office right when Rebecca stepped in, so she also saw this crime scene. The crime shocked the small town. Like I said before, this was a small, safe park. Nothing like this had ever happened before. Carrie was just beginning her life. She was only 20 at the time she was killed. Her uncle mentioned in the Forensic Files episode that learning of her death was the biggest shock he had ever had in his life. Her sister described her during the trial saying, quote, "When Carrie was happy, she instilled happiness in those around her." So you can only imagine what an amazing, beautiful person Carrie was.
Yeah.
Not to mention, she loved this job working at the parks. She loved talking to people, the customer service. It was something that she really enjoyed. Carrie was engaged to a man named Mike Kellen. He said that on May 20th, he had tried to get in touch with her on her cell phone and the office phone at about 3:30 p.m. and wasn't able to get a hold of her. We know now that she had already been murdered when he was trying to get in touch with her. Mike said that a couple hours after he called Carrie, a friend called him to tell him of her death. He said that it crushed him. Unlike most of the other cases we look at, Mike was never a suspect in the crime. And the crime scene pretty much summed up what the motive was, and it was pretty clear almost immediately that the motive was robbery. The office had been completely torn apart. The fax machine was on the ground, and it was clear that there had been a struggle, and Carrie had fought for her life. There wasn't much money in the office at the time of the robbery, about $2,000 from camping fees as well as souvenir sales, but all of this money was gone, including two, like, bank bags.
I wouldn't think, like, a campground would be, like, a prime location to rob.
I think the thought process was that it was kind of isolated. So if there was money in there, it might be an easy hit. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But this office wasn't always staffed. So the person that killed her may have believed that it would be empty and would be an easy hit. And I'll get into that a little bit more later. The office was small. And the safe that the cash was in could actually be seen when you, like, enter the building. So it wasn't hidden. It was right kind of in plain sight, right on the left of the entryway. So like I said before, it seemed like an easy target.
Yeah.
The money came from both the safe as well as the cash register. So everything was wiped out. There were a couple things of interest found at the crime scene. First, located about an inch or two from Carrie's hand was a watch. She was practically pointing at it, and I actually have a picture of this on the Instagram, so definitely be sure to check it out. The watch didn't belong to Carrie or any other park employees. It seemed to have been worn by whoever had killed Carrie, especially because it appeared that it had been ripped off that person's wrist as the fabric had been torn. It was like one of those fabric band watches.
So she was fighting back.
She was absolutely fighting back. Second, there was a pack of Doral 100 cigarettes on the ground. These also didn't belong to Carrie as she didn't smoke, and they were presumed to belong to the killer. You know, they questioned the other park employees and they didn't belong to any of them. Third, they were able to pinpoint the time of the crime from a clue left behind by Carrie herself. It appeared that Carrie had been writing a letter to her fiancé. She had written the date and the time at the top, and she never had a chance to finish this letter.
Jeez.
In the Forensic Files episode, they show the letter, which I'm pretty sure is her letter, but I'm not sure if they spiced it up or whatever, but it definitely looks like it was a crime scene. I can't get a good look at what the whole letter said. Even to the point where she stopped writing, it didn't show that much, but I will read you what the letter said because I think it's important to show how heartbreaking this crime is because she had so much ahead of her. So she said, "Hi, I just wanted you to know that I love you and you are the most important person in my life. I can't wait to marry you and have two children and live happily ever after. I never imagined I would have found my soulmate so soon, but I am so happy I did. The first time I saw you, thought you were so hot. I didn't think I'd actually get to fall in love with you, let alone meet you. So this is as much as the letter we can see, but it's so clear that she is so in love and she had so much ahead of her and she was so excited to see what her life would bring.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it was cut short.
I mean, 20 years old, like, essentially life's just kind of starting.
Exactly. So she had begun the letter at 2 p.m. That's what she wrote at the top. And her body was found at about 2:40 p.m. The last person who had seen Carrie alive was a park visitor who had left the office at about 1:55 p.m. So they knew that the crime had to happen between 2 p.m. and 2:40, which is actually a pretty small window. There was something that was noticeably missing from the office, though. A large stone with the Blue Mound State Park logo on it. It was always there, and in the Forensic Files episode, they show that it might have been on like one of the countertops. It's a pretty big stone. There's also a picture of that on Instagram. The stone was later found in a stream off the main road in the park. So like a road that you would have had to drive past to get to the office and such.
I think it was like the only road in and out too.
Yeah. The medical examiner was able to almost immediately get a clear vision of what happened to Carrie that afternoon. It appeared that the killer had entered the office with the intent to steal money. Carrie may have been in the bathroom when they entered, so that's what I was saying. It may have appeared that nobody was in the building, but Carrie, unfortunately, was just in the bathroom.
Yeah.
As she opened the door, she caught the killer off guard. The ME suggested that Carrie had been hit in the face and then forced to open the cash register as well as the safe. They found perfectly round blood droplets belonging to Carrie on both the cash register and the safe. And we know that that kind of blood droplet comes from blood that's like coming straight down.
So she was like standing there basically.
Yeah, she was like standing over the cash register and it was dripping down from her face, presumably. The killer had tried to control Carrie with her necklace and clothing that were used as ligatures. So she was also strangled during the struggle and the process of them trying to get the money. Carrie was ultimately killed by blunt force trauma to the head, 5 blows to be exact. They were able to match her head wounds to the stone that was found in the stream.
Ugh.
I know. And like almost perfectly, like a corner of the stone was matched to this like wound on her head. There was no sign of sexual assault, which like also kind of dug deeper into the fact that it was a crime to steal the money.
Right.
Investigators started looking into who could have done this. During the time frame, there were about 100 registered park visitors and employees on site, but it's not that easy. Each visitor is supposed to have a permit to enter the park. However, like I said before, the front office wasn't always staffed, so there's no way that they could have known exactly who was in that park at that time. A witness soon came forward and mentioned that they had seen a white car driving quite fast past their campsite between 2:15 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. The witness's campsite was only a short way from the front office, so it was absolutely possible that whoever was driving this car was the person that killed Carrie.
Especially if they're speeding away.
Exactly. Like, this witness, it stuck out to them that this person was driving so fast down the road. This was also the road where the stone was found, and it would have been easy for the person to just, they wouldn't even have had to get out of the car. They would have just driven down the road and thrown the stone out of the window, and it would have gone in the stream. So it was kind of all making sense now. And there was somebody that Carrie was afraid of at that park. It was another employee, and his name was Stephen Barber. Not only was Carrie afraid of him, but she had also told her friends that she thought he was stalking her.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Seems like a good suspect.
Yep. Barber was also known to be selling drugs, something that Carrie knew about and had mentioned, you know, a couple times about thinking about maybe turning him into the police. He
motive.
Didn't. Yep. He didn't have an alibi for the time of the crime, and he also owned a white car. Not looking good for Barber.
Not looking good at all.
No. Police believe that being a user and a seller of drugs, Barber may have wanted slash needed the money from the office and had been so desperate that he ended up killing Carrie in the attempt to steal it. Testing was done in the office. They did that super glue thing where they like put the super glue in there and then they heat it up so it like goes on everything.
Well, it sticks on the oils of your fingerprints.
Exactly. So they did that in the entire office, which I've never heard before. I've heard of them doing it on like plastic bags and, you know, little tiny objects, but I've never heard of them doing it in a whole entire room. So this was a pretty big feat for them. And they ended up being able to collect 135 prints, which is a lot of prints. And you have to keep in mind everybody that has ever visited the park or ever been into that office. I mean, that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
Anyway, out of the 135 prints, not a single one of these matched Barber.
And he worked there?
And he worked there.
Huh.
Which is interesting.
That seems kind of weird.
Yeah. Especially because him and Carrie seemed to know each other and Carrie worked in the office. But I don't know, maybe he didn't go there very often.
Yeah.
They ran a DNA test on the fabric watch band and found a mixture of three different people. One of the samples matched to Carrie. None of the samples matched Barber. Steve Barber had been the perfect suspect, but they finally had to kind of come to terms with the fact that it wasn't him and they just had to move on. They were able to match 97 of the prints found in the office to visitors and employees, leaving 30 unidentified people. They did run the DNA samples through CODIS as well as the Minnesota database, and they were able to find 19 potential matches, but they were ultimately able to eliminate all of these 19 people, and they were cleared. The investigation continued for about a year without any leads, when suddenly an inmate came forward saying that their cellmate had confessed to the crime. Turns out that this was an utter waste of time, and they did spend time looking at this angle. The cellmate, whose name was Flower, and the informant had worked on a scheme together so that they would be able to receive the reward money. And Flower wanted to be, he was already in prison for the rest of his life, but he preferred to be in state prison versus federal prison. And if he had been convicted of this crime, he would have been transferred to the Minnesota State Prison. So it was just a whole big scheme and it was an utter waste of time and they didn't get anything from it. And that, you know, I don't know, moving right along. 5 years quickly rushed by, countless leads, and nothing new was found. The investigator mentioned in the Forensic Files episode that he left Carrie's photo up on his desk the entire investigation, pushing him to solve the case and finally get her some justice.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of motivation to have her picture staring at you for, 5 years?
Mm-hmm. And he didn't put it away until after the killer was convicted. Mm. Finally, in 2006, they got a break. They decided to go back to the original evidence. Since DNA had become more precise, they felt that they might find something that they hadn't found before. And they did. They were able to get two distinct DNA profiles from the watch that didn't match Carrie's. One was female, and the other was male. They also looked at the cigarette box again, and they noticed that it still had a purchase sticker that said that it had been purchased from South Dakota. They had an idea. Maybe the killer wasn't from Minnesota at all. Maybe they were looking in the wrong database. So they sent the DNA samples to South Dakota so they could run them through their DNA database. And finally, in 2007, they got a match. Randy Swanee. It turned out that although 99.998% of the population could be excluded from this sample, Randy Swanee and his wife, Dawn, could not be.
Oh, wow. That's pretty convincing.
Yep. There was a momentary belief that Dawn may have played a part in the crime, but she was quickly ruled out as she had been at work during the time of the murder and, you know, it was a very solid alibi. She explained that sometimes she wore the watch, which is why her DNA would be on it, and kind of reminds me of the case where the girl wore her husband's pants.
Yeah. Weird.
The one explanation that investigators didn't have was why the watch was in the park office, especially because Swanee continued to deny that he had ever been in the office. You know. I mean.
Somehow his watch just made its way in there next to a dead body.
Just miraculously made it there. Not only was his DNA found at the scene, but they were also able to match both fingerprints and palm prints to those found in the office. So, I mean, maybe you can deny DNA. I mean, not really. But you certainly can't deny DNA and fingerprints. Swanee denied it all, though. And he continues to this day to say that he is innocent. But there is concrete proof that he had been there, you know?
Yeah.
Dawn actually ended up giving police a picture of Swanee wearing the watch, and it was worn at the same tightness as the wear patterns on the watch that they found. That picture is also on Instagram. There's also a photo of Swanee with a pack of Doral 100 cigarettes, which is his brand of cigarettes. What's more, it was confirmed that Donnie drove a white sedan matching the description of the witnesses. Or the witness's description of the car that he saw. Swanee was brought to trial, and during the trial, he continued to deny his involvement, saying that he was by himself fishing in South Dakota on that day.
Convenient.
Yep. Swanee had been in prison for burglary at the time that police had caught up with him. During the trial, one of his prison mates came forward and said that Swanee had told him a woman had been, quote, smoked in the head, unquote, that he had committed a crime in Blue Mounds and that his watch had fallen off during the crime. So, you know, if you didn't do it, why are you describing the exact crime to your cellmate?
And I mean, definitely seems up his in his wheelhouse if he's already in prison for burglary.
Exactly. Swanee was ultimately found guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder and 4 counts of second-degree murder. And I'm not really sure how that works, but that is what it says. During the trial, somebody did testify that it was, in fact, that prisoner I mentioned before that had done the crime, this Flowers guy. But it appeared that Flowers and the other inmate knew that this person that testified, this woman, was planning on a career in law enforcement and felt that if they told her that they had committed the crime, she would absolutely go and report it, so they would have a reliable witness, basically. So this was written out, you know. That was like the one thing that they felt kind of weird about. And it also, there was also 3 inmates that came out on the defense side that mentioned that the inmate that said that Swanee had confessed in prison was known to tell tall tales and wasn't reliable. So I think that's interesting too. But
bunch of jailhouse rats.
Yep. Nonetheless, he was sentenced to life in prison without the chance of parole. He has always maintained his innocence, and even during the trial, now this is really, this makes me mad. Even during sentencing, he turned around and looked at Carrie's family in the eye and told him that he was innocent and that he feels sorry for them, but it wasn't him that did it. I mean, that's cruel.
Yeah.
Carrie's mother mentioned in her statement that she wished he would have just kept his mouth shut, which I wish he had done that too. In her statement, Carrie's sister said, "Carrie's death has left me with a sadness that will never leave me." It's just a very heartbreaking crime.
Yeah.
She was so young.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine having to deal with that.
Yeah. Carrie's sister also said in the same statement that she saw her sister as her protector, and that was really heartbreaking. Investigators felt that Swanee might have been casing the place. Like I said, the safe wasn't really hidden, and it was in full view of anybody that came in or probably even looked into the window. They believe the situation was a lot like I said before. Carrie might have caught him off guard, and the situation just got out of hand really fast. Swanee applied for an appeal, but he was ultimately denied, and he is still in prison. Like I said before, it was Carrie's second year working at the park, and by all accounts, she loved it. She loved talking to the visitors, welcoming them, and helping answering their questions. It's so sad that she was killed during something that brought her so much joy. A memorial stone is put up in Blue Mound Park for Carrie. There's also a picture of that on her Instagram. So, Randy, like so many other convicts that we've covered, has a Write a Prisoner account. So I thought, like, let's read his bio, shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay, Sean, here you go.
All right, so his bio reads, "I've been feeling lonely and unneeded. Have you ever felt like this? If so, let's feel needed again together. I've been locked up 11 years now for a crime I didn't do. As I continue to fight to prove my innocence, I welcome any help you can do for me. I'm looking for friendship, companionship, legal help, or someone to just help me stay positive. I'm an open book, loyal, honest, shy, romantic, and a good listener. I have 3 kids, aged 18, 20, and 25. I'm close to my 18-year-old son and 25-year-old daughter. I try to be a good dad, even though I'm incarcerated. My hobbies are drawing, as you can see on my art page, listening to music, talking on the phone, and working on my innocence. In the free world, I like to go camping, work on cars, fish, and go to car races. I love Harley Davidsons, which is why I watch all the reruns I can of Sons of Anarchy. I also watch Gas Monkey Garage, American Pickers, and Yellowstone. I'm passionate about music. Currently, my favorite songs are Gone Away by Five Finger Death Punch, Bother by Stone Sour, and Lost by the Cranberries. I also like 80s hair bands and Metallica, but I enjoy all types of music. Let's start an adventure together. Can't wait to hear from you. Randy Swanee."
And there you have it, folks.
Seems like a all-American dude.
Yep.
With just a couple of big flaws.
Will not admit to his crime. So that's all I have today for the murder of Carrie Nelson. I hope that you enjoyed this episode, and we'll be back next week.
See you guys later on.
All right. Bye.